I don't want no oil spoiling my shoreline. I like fish much better than crud. I like birds and things a-creeping and crawling. Won't trade no more oil for blood. The sun done give us all we need to make this country run. But that black demon oil's got us fussing and fighting, and I do believe it's time we was done. I don't want them nukes run by them kooks who think radioactivity is fun. No more three-headed frogs or kids with leukemia. Nuclear power ain't fit for a dog. The sun don't give us all we need to make this country run. But that nuclear power's got us fussing and fighting, and I do believe it's time we was done. No nukes!
Good morning, Toledo, and good afternoon, Columbus and Bowling Green, and hello to everyone on the internet, wherever and whenever you are. My name is Joe DeMar, and I am here with my fantabulous co-host,
Rebecca Wood.
Yes, and together, Rebecca and I are going to be creating another hour of radio called For a Green Future. And For a Green Future is a show where we talk about ecology, the environment. And we talk about it in the ways that it affects you, your wealth, your health, your happiness, the wealth and health and happiness of your friends and your family, and the deer, the puma, and the basically everybody and everything, because we're all here together on this wonderful planet called Earth. And we have another wonderful show for you today. We're going to be just chatting for the next 10 minutes or so. And please call in and join us in our chat at any time, 877-909-1007. That's 877-909-1007. Then we will be hearing from a friend of the show, Kevin Camps from Beyond Nuclear, is going to be talking to us about something that happened this past week. There was a hearing in front of the Atomic License Safety Board because Energy Harbor, the company that inherited the nuke plants, Ohio nuke plants from First Energy, they've applied for a 20-year license renewal. And so there's a big thing about that. So, and then we'll hear from our wonderful advertisers and patrons, to whom we are extremely grateful. And then Rebecca, what will you be talking to us about?
The moon, in honor of Chinese Lunar New Year, which is coming up in 6 days.
That's cool. The Lunar New Year. All right, so you'll define exactly what that means.
It's
right?
Actually, well, I'll try. Yeah, it's celebrated. They're calling it the Lunar New Year now because it's celebrated more places than just China. But okay, the local notions vary a little bit. So.
All right. Then it's ecological news. And we've got ecological news from all over the world today, as we often do. And that'll be our show. And as I say, we hope at some point you'll join us. And if you have a comment that you don't want to just call in and make live, you can send a text to 419-973-5841. That's 419-973-5841. Or you can always send us an email at joe@joedemarforagreenfuture.org. That's joedemarforagreenfuture.org. So, nice sunny day out there, and it's actually going to get quite warm over the next several days. In fact, later in this week, we're going to be up in the 50s. Maybe we're going to hit 60 here in this
mind-boggling.
Yeah, the second week in February. And today, according to my cell phone, right now, the temperature is already 9 degrees above average for this date. And, you know, we keep coming back to the global warming thing, and it's just because it's happening. And the thing that it's easy to forget is that almost all of us know that it's happening. Almost everybody understands. Almost everybody accepts the fact that there is global warming. But there's this this little minority that keeps claiming it's not happening. You know, even though we're going to have a 60 degree days here in February. And what has happening is that they're being used as shields by the fossil fuel companies, by the Republicans, because they've made this one of their main campaign things, is denying global warming.
You know, I think that, like, the deal with most people is that most people think that we have another 10 years or so before we really got to get serious about dealing with this.
Could be people have that hope.
That's a reaction I get a lot. They're like, oh, no, I'm sure, you know, we're not all going to be dead by the time Biden's plan kicked in. We have longer than that, because we just want to think we have longer than that.
Right. And, you know,
surely the Democrats would have told us if we didn't have longer than that. You know, they're the good guys, right? Yeah.
It is interesting because it's kind of challenging to sort of go through the world right now, because that first of all, that's wrong.
Yes, it is. It's very, very wrong.
Yeah, we don't have 10 years, right? And if you're somebody who looks at the graphs, you know, we've been looking at the graphs of the charts. We've been following them for decades, and just the level that they're in the past year, the level that the heating has taken off as we knew it would, those of us who understand the concept of a
positive feedback loop,
and seeing
not actually positive and its net effect.
Yes, not this time. And seeing that this is actually, you know, that it's actually happening as we've predicted, the numbers are leaping off the charts. Kind of makes you want to, like, just start yelling and screaming and running around, but but is it more sane not to act that way when the crisis is real, or is it more sane to just keep calm and you know, just keep quietly insisting to everybody, you know, yes, this is terrible and we have to deal with it now, not 10 years from now?
I'm not sure we're in a situation where sanity even applies anymore. You know, I think it's a personal choice whether you want to run around in circles screaming or not.
Yeah. Well, I don't recommend it. Because personally, you know, it actually isn't even very satisfying when you do that.
It's okay if somebody wants to make a different choice than that. You know? We'll just say.
Yeah. So most people, you know, vast majority accept that it's true. Most people, vast majority, say that we want to deal with it. This is just a pattern increasingly that the will of the people is not being expressed by the actions of the government. I mean, you know, once upon a time, people care. You know, people in government cared what their constituents thought. And, you know, there's all kinds of examples of this happening. One of the biggest ones for me personally locally is what's going on with Bowling Green with their solar power penalty. 90%+ of the people in BG don't want to have one. And yet, you know, over and over again, the city council and the municipal utility board, both parts of our government, just say, nope, we're going to keep charging the penalty, even though...
Somebody tried to tell me that the wind turbines in Bowling Green are coming down. Is that true?
Oh yeah, they're going to tear them down. They're planning to destroy them. Which again,
I think I just rolled my eyes so loud people could hear it on the radio.
Yeah, about 75% of people in BG don't want the turbines torn down, but they're going to tear them down anyway.
Yeah.
Even though there's a practical alternative, and that is that the company that made them, Vestas, offers refurbishing of turbines. So you just take them off the tower, you pack them up in container ships and ship them back to the factory, and they send them back guaranteed in as good or better condition with another 15-year warranty.
Okay, so that seems acceptable.
Yeah, so it's very straightforward, and there's you know, grant money that could help offset the costs, but our Director of Public Utilities, who's the vice president of AMP, the company that owns the coal plant in Illinois where BG gets 60% of its electricity, you know, he's not even considering this because, you know, every watt that gets generated by the wind turbines is a watt that we don't buy from his coal plant. But what they're going to do instead, okay, what the city council is proposing to maintain this little veneer of progressiveness is to build another small solar field.
Okay.
Yeah, another small solar field. But it's kind of funny.
But Bowling Green is just really only average in terms of sun, but has crazy amounts of wind.
Yeah. Oh, the wind resource, as they discovered once they put the wind turbines up, the wind resource is fantastic.
Mm-hmm.
It generated, all these turbines generated much more power
than
they were predicted.
I could have told them that. I used to walk to school in that town.
Yeah. Yeah. So, and of course, what we really need to do is to put up more solar fields and...
It's also too bad that you can't somehow make power out of mud, because they had a lot of that too, as I recall. Mud and wind.
Yeah. Right. But, yeah, and so what we need to do is keep the wind turbines, build more wind turbines, and put up more solar fields. But instead,
exactly.
They've decided that they're going to have 5%, quote-unquote, renewable, you know, quote-unquote, clean energy to use as their... like their sheen on the outside, and 60% coal, and then...
Yeah, Bowling Green might be the Ohio your parents warned you about.
But, yeah, I just wanted to say that this was this is sort of a pattern which is becoming more and more frequent, that basically the people want one thing and the government's given them the opposite. If there's a little minority that they could use to hold up to, like, as shields against public opinion, they do to say, oh, look, it's them. They're insisting there is no global warming, so how could we do anything? And one of the methods used to cut people out of the process is making the process so bureaucratic and so difficult to even get to the point where you can talk to the policymakers that it becomes almost impossible. And one of the best examples of this, we're about to hear from Kevin Camps, one of the best example of this is the method of appealing licensing, re-licensing applications. So over at the Perry plant, they're scheduled to go offline in 2026, which is when the plant was designed for and engineered for, and that's the point at which it wears out. But they want to have another 20 years on top of that. And so there are a lot of people who don't want the plant to keep going, and they're being cut out of the discussions. And one of the ways to do that is that they're supposed to be able to have a public hearing if there's interveners, people with legitimate concerns who want to contest this and say, you know, no, don't extend this license another 20 years. We don't need the power. It's dirty. It's dangerous, blah, blah, blah. But so what they've done, they had a problem because they've denied every single intervener's request. You know, they've never turned down a license application, no matter how terrible the plant is, no matter how expensive the power is, no matter what the record of like accidents and leaks and things. So they've never turned down the corporations that want the license extension, no matter how bad the nuclear plant was. And that was starting to look kind of bad, kind of fishy, kind of like, well, maybe this is just a rubber stamp. So what they've done now is they've created a pre-hearing. So first you have to have a hearing where you get to argue that you should be allowed to have a hearing.
Oh, dear Lord.
And if you don't make it through the pre-hearing, then there never is an actual hearing, and that way they don't have to show their, you know, their 100% biased decisions. They don't have to defend them because they don't have to officially make that decision. All they have to do is to say, oh, I'm sorry, you didn't get through the pre-hearing process, so we were never able to consider any of that stuff that you want
and
to talk about.
Just like that, the word democracy suddenly has air quotes around it.
Yeah. And so that's what we're going to hear now from Kevin talking about this past week, where they had the pre-hearing about whether or not to relicense Perry. So
welcome back to For a Green Future. Please share with us your name and your organization. Hi, my name is Kevin Camps, and I serve as Radioactive Waste Specialist at Beyond Nuclear.
Ah, well, welcome back, Kevin. And I know that you are one of the people, or your organization is one of the ones that it has been historically helping the fight against Ohio's nuclear plants. I remember we worked together quite a bit on the Davis-Bessie relicensing. And so now it's time Perry has decided to try to relicense and ask for another 20 years. We had a big event yesterday in that process. What exactly happened?
Yeah, this was a meeting of the Nuclear Regulatory Commission's Atomic Safety and Licensing Board. It's an administrative law panel of three hearing examiners. They used to be called administrative law judges. And so you had the various parties. You had the company, Energy Harbor, which wants 20 more years at Perry for a total of 60 years. You've got the Nuclear Regulatory Commission staff, and then you've got the interveners, in this case, Ohio Nuclear Free Network and Beyond Nuclear, all parties represented by attorneys.
Mm-hmm. And your attorney, meeting you and, or Beyond Nuclear's and Ohio Nuclear Free Network, it was Terry Lodge, correct?
Right. He's based in Toledo, and he's been a watchdog on the nuclear power industry in Ohio for going on a half century now. So we were very fortunate to have his legal counsel.
Okay. So as I understand it, this hearing yesterday was a hearing to determine whether or not you folks would be allowed to intervene.
That's right. It was a pre-hearing. And the NRC really is a kangaroo court process. It's very rare for interveners to actually get their day in court, to actually have hearings on the merits. And what they've done, despite their denials, is they've created a fortification against interveners ever getting into a hearing process, at least interveners like ourselves, nonprofit environmental groups. Sometimes state governments, I think, strike a little bit more fear into the hearts of the NRC, and so they'll let states into their proceedings. And sometimes intervening environmental groups, public interest groups, will cross that threshold, but it's very rare. So really what this is an opportunity for us to shine a spotlight on these issues. And that's what we tried to do yesterday.
Mm-hmm. So I was able to listen to the first hour or hour and a half or so of the proceedings, but we'll get into that a little more later, or in just a minute. But I want to go back to something you just said, where the NRC has created fortifications against intervening, even though it's supposedly a right that we have to become interveners. How effective have those fortifications been over the years?
Pretty airtight. I mean, we struggled, for example, at Davis-Bessie for many long years, about 6 years, we tried to intervene against the 20-year license extension at Davis-Bessie near Toledo, also on the Lake Erie shoreline. And that's a pretty long time, 6 years of trying to get a hearing on the merits. And our biggest single contention at Davis-Bessie was the cracked shield building, which became known to the public about a year after the license extension proceeding had begun. We never did get a hearing on the merits. We were always denied in the preliminary stages. So as hard as we worked, as much information, data, evidence we brought forward, they didn't want to hear it. And then surprise, surprise, after they rejected us and gave a 20-year extension at Davis-Bessie, many of the things we said about the shield building and its risks turned out to be true, that they would have to do active maintenance. And so, you know, it's a very rigged process. And again, the only reason we really engage in it is to try to shine the light of truth on these matters and educate the public as to how serious the risks are at Ohio's atomic reactors.
Mm-hmm. Now, the light was being shined yesterday, but it was a little bit hard to see. I mean, what the format was it sounded like the attorneys and the NRC and the Atomic Safety Licensing Board were doing something akin to Zooming. They had a live video conference going, but the public, all we could do was call in with the phones and listen to what was going on. We didn't have any kind of way to see what was happening.
Yeah, that's true. it's a very rarefied Byzantine process to begin with. And now in this age of WebEx is what they used, there's all kinds of ways to simply, you know, lock out the public from any active or meaningful participation. The only, you know, meaningful, substantial participation that the public had yesterday was represented by Terry Lodge making our arguments for our environmental coalition. But the Atomic Safety and Licensing Board itself really controls things to a maximum degree, even to the point where they ask all the questions and the opposing counsel are able to answer the questions when directly asked a question. But there's never an opportunity for our counsel to cross-examine adversary counsel. And this is even true if we were to get a hearing on the merits. That's how entirely controlled the process is. It bears little resemblance, actually, to an actual court of law. And that's our ultimate recourse if we lose. And chances are very high that we're going to lose this adversarial proceeding before the Nuclear Regulatory Commission. We can appeal to the federal courts, and then that's another layer of deference to the agency and almost a 100% batting average, which doesn't exist in baseball, but it exists in nuclear licensing, where the industry almost always gets what it wants, at least in the official process. It may be forced to make repairs or even close reactors under public pressure in the court of public opinion. But it's not the NRC telling it to do so, not the staff, not the commissioners, not the Atomic Safety and Licensing Board. And it just shows that the ultimate power resides with the public. And so we engage in these processes, we engage outside of these processes to try to influence things. But man, the corruption and the collusion is deep. And just as a warning to listeners, the Japanese parliament did an independent investigation of the Fukushima nuclear catastrophe's root cause. It took them a year, and their conclusion was collusion between the regulatory agency, the company, and government officials. And what's truly frightening is we have so much collusion along those lines in this country that we all live in peril, whether at Davis-Bessie, at Perry, at Beaver Valley. That's just the Energy Harbor fleet. And then you've got other companies with dozens of reactors across the Great Lakes and beyond across the country. And we're living on borrowed time until this collusion leads to another nuclear power catastrophe, perhaps this time in our own country.
So your contentions yesterday, you had several of them. The first one, as I understand it, you actually withdrew, and I was kind of curious about that because it seems like a good issue to me, or a big thing, that basically there's new information about fault lines in the vicinity of the nuclear plant. Could you talk a little bit about that contention and why you guys decided to withdraw that one?
Yeah, it's really just a technicality. We're not withdrawing it in the sense that we're going to bring it back as an emergency enforcement petition. It's a question of which window to go through at the Nuclear Regulatory Commission with all its rules that benefit the industry. And in this particular case, what the NRC has done is they've said generically, they've looked at seismic risks at nuclear power plants. In fact, it's a current regulated issue at Perry. Therefore, we can't bring it up in this license extension proceeding because the only thing you can bring up are aging related matters. And so they say they have it covered. We disagree with them. We're going to bring it up as an emergency enforcement petition. And like you said, it's a very strong contention. It's a very strong safety concern. We have an amazing expert witness, a PhD geologist who's made very substantial allegations about the earthquake risks at Perry that date back pre-construction, when very antiquated scientific methods were used, and a lot was disregarded that was significant at the time of construction and pre-construction. And so our expert witness has urged that current scientific methods be used, that scientific insights that have developed over the last 40 years be applied, none of which has taken place yet. So stay tuned. Again, Fukushima was an earthquake-triggered nuclear power catastrophe. And so these are very high stakes at Perry.
Okay, so could you talk about your other contentions, the ones that were talked about in the proceedings yesterday?
Yep. We had a total of three contentions. The other two that were talked about yesterday included tritium releases in the future at Perry and also alternatives to 20 more years at Perry. So, in terms of tritium releases, there's been a bad history of that at Perry going backwards in time. The concern raised yesterday was the cumulative impacts of not only tritium, which is radioactive hydrogen, which is hazardous in various ways to human beings and other living organisms, the cumulative impacts of tritium releases and other radionuclides, because there are other radioactive substances released in so-called normal operations, routine operations at Perry, and also the synergistic effects of these releases interacting with other radioactive and chemical toxins in the groundwater in Lake Erie. And just to show you, I guess, how cynical the Atomic Safety and Licensing Board is, the judges and other opposing counsel would ask our lawyer to please define these terms. What is cumulative impacts? What are synergistic effects? Under the National Environmental Policy Act, this is supposed to be a central issue under discussion, not only by us, but by the Nuclear Regulatory Commission staff, by the company seeking this 20-year license extension. If they don't know the definitions of these very basic concepts, then we're all in trouble. And I think it was more just a cynical game to put our attorney on the spot. And he represented us quite well. Like I said, he's nearly 50 years into nuclear power watchdogging. This is not his first rodeo. And just on the synergistic effects, as well as the hazards of radioactivity accumulating in the environment over decades at Perry and from other nuclear power plants in the area. Rachel Carson in Silent Spring in 1962, I think it was, warned about radiation's hazards, warned about the synergistic impacts of radiation interacting with toxic chemicals like pesticides, which, believe you me, have also flowed into Lake Erie. So, I'm glad that we can educate the ASLB and the NRC staff and even the company about these very basic concepts that date back many decades. But it's really scary that this is our safety regulator and this company is entrusted to run this now 40-year-old atomic reactor. And then on the tritium releases, I mean, again, I bring up Fukushima Daiichi in Japan. There's global concern about the tritium wastewater dumping that's now going on since last August at Fukushima Daiichi. But here we have our own source of tritium going into Lake Erie. And what makes it even worse than Fukushima Daiichi is Lake Erie is a drinking water source, let alone the fisheries. So there's all kinds of pathways that these radioactive hazards can reach people through the food chain, through the drinking water supply, even through the air we breathe. And they want to keep these risks going for 20 additional years at Perry.
So they're asking for an extension to go off the current license expires 2026. They want to go to 2046, right? So what was the result of yesterday's proceedings? Did they make a decision then, or are they going to make a decision in the future? What happened?
Well, just quickly on that last remaining contention about alternatives to 20 more years at
Oh,
Perry,
yes.
it was shown very clearly. Again, we have excellent expertise that prepared testimonies. In this case, it was Ned Ford, who has watched utility economics in Ohio for many decades, knows it better than most people at the regulatory agencies, truth be told. And the point was that Perry's not needed. The grid operator, PJM, said so in 2019. In fact, Perry and Davis-Besse aren't needed. The lights are going to stay on. There's that much excess electricity in Ohio. There's that much excess electricity in neighboring states. So that was our last contention.
I was actually there when PJM made that testimony during the House Bill 6 proceedings, and it was, they were very straightforward. We don't need those power plants.
Energy
So
Harbor and own self-interest just made a conclusory statement that Perry is absolutely needed for baseload in the PJM grid. No, it's not. The PJM grid has stated that's not the case. So, you know, it's almost laughable, the juvenile attempts at a license application that are accepted by the NRC as acceptable and will be approved. So it's just incredible that, you know, congressional watchdogs supposedly are letting this kind of thing just go on routinely across the country. And now here at Perry, the same with state regulators and state elected officials. They all seem to be in cahoots. And again, a collusion as the root cause of nuclear catastrophe. So we fight back as best we can. Mm-hmm. The licensing board will take some time and get back to us. If we had to guess, they'll probably say, sorry, suckers. They said yesterday they recognize our standing, which is good because we have individuals who live very close to Perry who are members of our group. So they don't challenge our standing. What they challenge is the substance of our contentions, whether technical or legal. And they usually just kill us on that and say, sorry, you've brought no worthy matter to our attention. Therefore, we're going to recommend 20 more years.
One thing that struck me yesterday was that Energy Harbor kept saying that one of the reasons they want to keep the nukes going is because they have so much uncertainty about other energy sources. And I kind of felt like, you have uncertainty because you didn't do enough research, because, you know, in other places in the world, wind and solar and storage are supplying 24/7 power without any trouble. And so the reason you're uncertain is because you don't know what you're talking about. But that was just my opinion.
So, well, I mean, now, is it a question of incompetence and nonetheless good faith, but incompetence? No, it's not. I mean, look at who this company is. This is Energy Harbor. This is the company under a new name that bribed the House Speaker of the Ohio Legislature to give it a massive bailout. And so how this company can even be taken seriously by federal regulators is beyond me. Maybe because NRC is a part of these criminal conspiracies to put all of Ohio and beyond at risk of 20-year license extensions at Davis-Besse, at Perry, at other reactors, upwind and upstream, and down the food chain, drinking water supply from Ohio residents.
Yeah, we're still covering the HB6 story here because they just indicted Sam Randazzo, who was the Public Utilities Commission. And I have to say, I don't know if I said this on the show before, but the day they convicted Larry Householder and sentenced him to 20 years in federal prison for the bribery, for the nuclear industry bribery scandal, I actually went to the local bar and bought everybody a round of drinks. It's, you know, so seldom we get that kind of justice going. But the corruption does occasionally get exposed, and then, you know, sometimes people pay. All right, well, we're just about out of time here. Anything you'd like to add, and how do people follow what you guys are doing?
Yeah, just one more word on HB6. There was an excellent write-up in the New York Times in recent days about the significance of HB6 on a national level, that it's sort of a harbinger of things to come elsewhere, let alone in Ohio. So this corruption issue is a national problem that we'd better address. The stakes at nuclear power plants are just off the charts. So we'd better get our head around this as a society before the worst happens. And if folks would like to learn more about what we're up to in the Great Lakes and beyond, our website is beyondnuclear.org.
Okay. Well, that was our interview. Thanks so much for listening. And I want to toot our own horn for just a second here, because this is the kind of interview that, you know, we always talk about how these ecological issues affect your wealth, your health, your happiness. This one affects your wealth directly, both because your electric bill is bigger because of House Bill 6, and because it turns out that running the nuclear plants means more expensive electricity than building brand new wind and solar, since wind and solar are so much less expensive than even an already built and operating nuke plant. That, again, this is if they get the relicensing, that means 20 years of higher electric bills for you. So, all right, but now it's time to hear from the organizations and the people that are helping us. Let's go to our advertisers.
For a Green Future is also brought to you by the Wood County Park District. The Wood County Park District is a natural resources conservation agency. They protect natural spaces, maintain quality green spaces, provide engaging programming, and they teach people to love and respect nature. They also restore wildlife habitats and lead people on outdoor adventures. Wood County Parks protects natural spaces in Wood County for all to enjoy from 8 a.m. to 30 minutes past sunset every day of the year. There are several ways to get a hold of them and find out what's happening. One is to call them at 419-353-1897. Another is to visit their website, www.wcparks.org. The website again is www.wcparks.org. They are also available on all social media, Instagram, Facebook, Twitter, and many others. Just search for WC Parks. That's the Wood County Park District, and we're very grateful for their support.
And we are also grateful for the support of our patrons. And these are fantastic people who've gone to patreon.com. There they searched for For a Green Future. Up popped our website, and they signed up to do a monthly donation, just a little bit, just whatever they could afford comes out of their account once a month, comes over to us. And that's how we could afford to bring you this kind of information, which I'm pretty confident you're not going to find anywhere else. So, okay, Rebecca, now on to your segment, and what will we be talking about today?
All right, well, we're going to discuss the moon a little bit, because, let's see.
The moon.
This coming Saturday is Lunar New Year across the world, including in China. But, yeah, there's certain aspects of the celebration that are in most places, but then, you know, everybody has their own little local spin on it. So it's really not just Chinese New Year, unless, you know, you're talking about just China here, but what they celebrate there. But yeah, it's the year of the dragon now. So I thought I'd talk about the moon a little, or it's going to be the year of the dragon. Very soon. Good time to have a baby, apparently. Dragons are the best sign. They have an official best sign, not in Greek astrology. Western, we pussyfoot around about that, you know, but they're just like, no, that one, that's the good one. So, yeah, the moon is the Earth's only natural satellite. Its orbit is 238,900 miles long, and which is 30 times the Earth's diameter. So that little guy is going a fairly long distance. The same side, I'm not sure whether I knew this or not, always faces Earth because the gravitational pull has locked its rotation to this planet. So technically in geophysical terms, the moon is a planetary mass object or a satellite planet. So I always kind of wondered about that. Like, is the moon a planet or what? It sort of is, but it isn't. Well, it's kind of a lesser quality of, like, category of planet, I guess, you know. And its mass is 1.2% of the Earth, so it's really pretty tiny, you know. It's like a little chihuahua running around a Saint Bernard or something. Ecologically speaking, according to this article from the UK Museum of Natural History website, it's an interviewer by, let's see, Kiri Lozoff. I think I wrote down the name wrong. But yeah, it's an interview with Dr. Tom White, senior curator. The ecological impact of the moon, according to him, pretty much breaks down to time, tides, and light. So that's kind of, you know, pithy and easy to remember there. Dr. White says the moon has been up there as long as evolution has been taking place, and lunar rhythms are embedded in the life cycles of many organisms. An example would be bird migration and navigation. They use the moon for that. I don't know if it's geomagnetic too. I think they're still figuring out, they're still studying exactly how birds do that. They don't really know, but they're pretty sure the moon has something to do with it. But yeah, so the reproduction of many organisms is timed to specific phases of the lunar cycle. And apparently there is a thing called circolunar rhythms, which exist and which are somewhat harder to observe than the circadian rhythms about, you know, what happens at day versus what happens at night for a particular organism. Another really great example of the moon's impact on reproduction of organisms on Earth, the life cycles, is the Great Barrier Reef coral spawning. Apparently always occurs somewhere in time in October through December after a full moon. So Mm-hmm. That is when you want to go to Australia if you want to see that. Do we still even have a Great Barrier Reef? Is it been completely breached at this point?
No, yeah, it's still there.
Still there. Okay, right, still spawning a little bit, hopefully. So, yeah.
And it actually had a little bit of a recovery last year. It was doing a little better. But this year, I don't know what the status is. This is, of course, Australia's summer. So this is the hottest weather down there. So that might be affecting the coral right now. I don't know.
There was also, just to wrap up, for my zinger here, there was a meme going around the internet by, it was a quote from James Baldwin, supposedly, something about some people wanting to colonize the room and others wanting to dance before it, the moon, others wanting to dance before it as an ancient friend. Which you could theoretically do both, but not if you're on the moon. And, you know, I think it's like, I think we should be blacklisted as tenants at this point. You know, we should be required to clean up our own planet before we go anyplace else.
I could not see that. And I don't mind the idea of colonizing the moon. I think that would be kind of cool. But that latest moon probe, the one that didn't make it, the one that crashed back to Earth.
Yeah, that wasn't good.
Some of the stuff on there, I mean, they had ashes, which, you know, of people who had passed, which the Navajo said, don't do that. That's, you know, but some of the other stuff they had on there, they had like empty water bottles from a water bottle company. And it's kind of, I was kind of like, so we're sending rockets to the moon to just dump trash.
Okay, this is not a good trend. Yeah.
You know, it's like, why? I don't know.
This is, I can see human buildings by looking around where I'm at, you know?
Mm-hmm.
It's like, what are you going to, you're going to live on the moon, you're going to always be in the dark or always be in the light?
No.
No?
No. No, the moon has night and day like the Earth, except their days are 2 weeks long and their nights are 2 weeks long.
Yeah, I wouldn't enjoy that personally.
Yeah, it's a little confusing.
And everybody's going to look up and like see a bunch of little good crap encrusting the moon eventually when it gets big enough. That's not good.
Yeah.
It's going to ruin the view.
No.
And also some people can live where they can really never go outdoors.
Yeah, let's try, if we're going to colonize the moon or the Mars or anywhere, let's try to do it without the whole trash pollution thing, you know.
Yeah.
Let's start, when we start a new colony on a new planet, let's make that completely, you know, 100% self-sufficient recycling from the beginning.
At least we could use this as a chance to start over and be smart this time.
Yeah, you know? Exactly. All right, well, on to ecological news. Speaking of trying to be smart, China has reopened their carbon credit market. This was a story in the South China Morning Post. The carbon credit markets are where you get a credit for either generating non-carbon power, like generating solar power, or you get a credit for like saving trees that absorb carbon. And then these are supposed to be bought and sold, and somehow it's supposed to lower the demand for carbon and increase the demand for renewables. The problem is that this basic strategy doesn't work. In fact, there was a story in The Guardian back in August on August 24th of 2023, the title of that one was "Carbon Credit Speculators Could Lose Billions as Offsets Deemed Worthless," because the whole idea, the idea was, this was one of Al Gore's schemes too, which was just completely false. The idea was that you buy and sell these credits. And like if you're a polluter, like if you're a coal plant like Prairie State, you need to offset your carbon by buying carbon credits from somebody who's either got some trees growing or has some solar panels going. For example, my solar system on my house has averted 38,000 pounds of carbon since it was put in place, which according to today's carbon credit market, I should be worth $15.
Yay.
So I should be able to sell my credits like that I've earned by generating solar power for $15 and buy myself lunch or something. But what actually happens is the value of these credits keeps crashing. And there's the study in The Guardian that they talk about showed that there's no benefit. In fact, sometimes the carbon credits make things worse. And so China's decision to reopen their carbon credit market is basically it's just a sort of a desperate PR thing to say, oh, look, we're going to try to remove carbon by selling these carbon credits and make it more expensive to generate carbon. So A, it doesn't work, but B, what basically happens if you do ever get a successful carbon credit market going is it locks in the demand for there to be carbon. Because as long as there's carbon being marketed, there has to be carbon being put into the air. And what we need is zero carbon, you know, not somewhat less carbon. So the whole the philosophy of a carbon credit market is wrong. And so China, that's a sucky move on China's part to reopen their carbon credit market. All right, now on to, from China, we go to Washington, D.C. And the White House this past week announced a big thing. It was hailed in a lot of the news stories, a lot of the press stories on this as a liquid natural gas export ban, an LNG export ban. And the White House has trotted out over 50 organizations and prominent individuals like Greenpeace, Mark Ruffalo, the Sierra Club, NRDC, Al Gore, all, you know, great groups and great people saying this is a wonderful thing. But if you actually look at the details of it, it's kind of like Biden's ban on uranium mining that opened up a uranium mine.
Yeah.
What it actually is it's not at all a ban on liquid natural gas exports. Okay, A. But what it is they have suspended the approval for building new liquid natural gas export terminals in the United States if those terminals were going to supply countries that are not that are non-free trade agreement companies. So yeah, a lot more limited. Basically, free trade agreement countries are countries that we have agreements with, like Canada and Mexico. We got the NAFTA agreement. That's a free trade agreement. So if you wanted to export from a U.S. port to one of those countries, there's about 20 of them around the world. This pause, it's called, more accurately called a pause than a ban, doesn't apply to you. You can go ahead and build your LNG terminal. And so basically what this really does, see, the thing is that we really had zero liquid natural gas exports in 2020. And over the past 4 years, we became the world's biggest natural LNG exporter, more than Qatar, more than any of the other Middle East countries. We export more liquid natural gas already than anybody in the world. And this will not affect any of that at all. But what's really going on here is that what the Biden administration has discovered, what a lot of third world countries have discovered, and that is that once you become an exporter and of these fossil fuels, that actually drives up the price domestically. So because now you and I, trying to heat our house with gas, we're competing with the entire nation of China over the same gas.
Wow.
And so China has a lot more money than us. They could afford to pay a lot more for their gas. So our gas bills go up because the gas suppliers are like, well, China's offered me, you know, twice as much as the U.S. company, so I'm going to just export to China. And so this pause, and so this whole change of this whole exporting thing happened so quickly, and there's so much of it in such a short amount of time that the price increases are already starting to happen. And, you know, I think Biden perhaps doesn't want people's gas bills doubling and tripling in an election year. And so this pause should slow that process down a little bit, that increase in price. And the other reason is it also, it's pressure on the other countries, the non-trade agreement countries, to sign trade agreements with us. Because we've been trying to get a trade agreement with China for about 10, 15 years now, and they just refuse to sign because we're insisting that they like buy more U.S. products and stuff like that.
So it's basically, if we don't like you, then you can't destroy the environment.
As quickly, right.
Yeah.
You can't use our gas.
Our buddies. Only our special buddies are allowed to do that. All right.
Exactly. So I'm not denigrating all these organizations and people that say this is a good thing. It is a good thing because it's literally one of the very first times that the fossil fuel industry has been denied anything. Yeah. But I'm also cautioning people not to think, not to get into their heads, oh, there's a liquid natural gas ban, which for political reasons, some Republicans are saying, oh, Biden's banned the export of natural gas. That's not at all true. So it's a good tiny little step in the right direction, but it is just a tiny little step in the right direction and not this huge, terrible shift in policies or wonderful shift in policy. It'd be great if we didn't export any gas. And as we know, we need to stop using it ourselves. All right, on to our next story. And there, this one isn't really technically an ecological story, but it affects ecological stories because this is a decision by the Ohio Supreme Court, which has been consistently anti-environmental. And so this is worth noting that the past week, Ohio Supreme Court decided that felons can run for state office after all. Yeah.
Which, if you've been following, the Ohio energy policy is very, very relevant to it, unfortunately.
Yes. Yeah, there's a lot of felons involved in
like
nuclear power and, yeah, places like that. So basically, there was a guy, Stephen Krause. He was convicted of stealing. He was an auctioneer, and he got convicted of stealing a bunch of stuff he was supposed to auction off. He got convicted of just taking it, antiques, shotguns, etc. And so he got tried and convicted. He's a felon. And so he was a state representative. And it's kind of funny. One of his constituents, Dennis Schreiner, brought this case before the Erie County Board of Elections. And to the credit of the Erie County Board of Elections, they agreed. They said, yeah, Krause can't run. He's a felon. But Krause appealed to the Ohio Supreme Court.
No, Lord.
The Ohio Supreme Court said, sure, he could run. Their excuse was that the letter of the law, the regulation that said felons can't run for office in Ohio, says that you have to be in a position where you would be a substantial management or control over property of a state agency, political subdivision, or private entity. And so somehow the Ohio Supreme Court thinks that the legislators, the ones who actually create and control the state agencies and so forth, political subdivisions, that somehow that's not substantial management. Somehow setting the budget and making the regulations isn't managing.
The one positive aspect of this is that we think about it this way, Joe. Like we might potentially have the ability to vote for an actual drug kingpin instead of these guys in the energy industry and improve a lot of our state considerably.
Yeah, well, yeah.
I broke Joe. Yeah,
no,
sorry.
Yeah, no comment on that. And I'd like to actively discourage any drug felons who are listening from any drug kingpins. Please don't run for office in Ohio, even though you can.
It would be a step down for them, yeah, in terms of ethics and prestige and reputation, but still, you know, probably, you know, innocent drug lords should not soil their hands in the Ohio legislature, you're right.
Yeah, well... So Doug Schreiner, the guy who brought the case, said, pointed out that it's very ironic that Krause lost his auctioneer's license because of this conviction, but now he could still be an Ohio House of Representatives. So,
right.
And of course, Krause claims innocence, but the problem is he's been convicted in a court of law, and I have to also say I've worked in prisons for some times, and 90% of the guys in there also claim innocence. So
there we
unless
go.
We have a 90% false conviction rate, some of them may actually be guilty. Okay.
Just you, one or two.
Yeah. Oh, speaking of guilt and felons, we got an update on Holtec.
Oh, boy.
The wonderful company which has been convicted of bribing people and which is trying to restart the closed Palisades reactor. They ran into a little trouble in New Jersey.
Good.
The Attorney General has fined them $5 million because they lied on an application in order to get $1 million in tax breaks. They just used false numbers. And now, this is all according to a story of the New Jersey Spotlight News on February 2nd. And now they're in even bigger trouble because the same attorney general, Matthew Plotkin, is trying to deny them $260 million they got in tax breaks because they also lied on that application. Specifically, what they were asked on that application for the $260 million was, has your company ever been prohibited from dealing with the government? And after Toltec's bribery in 2010, the conviction of bribery, they were denied the ability to work with the government for a couple of years until they, you know, greased some palms and got back in good with the TVA. but they lied. They said, no, we've never been convicted of anything.
You're just saying this strictly for entertainment purposes.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. Oh, the greasing palms thing.
Yeah.
All right. I'm sorry. I shouldn't say that factually. I'm saying that as metaphorically.
Yeah,
metaphorically. Good. Okay. So anyway, and kind of funny, the same day that the $5 billion penalty came in, Biden announced that he's going to loan Holtec $1.5 billion for the Palisades restart. So there's something interesting. All right. And there's also a lawsuit against Holtec right now because a whistleblower, former executive, says they're hiding $750 million in losses in order to be eligible for things like the $1.5 billion loan.
Which does sort of sound like them.
Yeah. All right. Well, that's it for this show. Even though we still have some more news, we bring that up next week. Thanks so much for listening. This is Joe DeMar.
And Rebecca Wood.
And we are signing off.
I don't want no oil, a spoil in my shoreline. I like fish much better than crud. I like birds and things a-creeping and crawling. Won't trade no more oil for blood. The sun done give us all we need to make this country run. But that black demon oil's got us fussing and fighting, and I do believe it's time we was done. I don't want them nukes run by them kooks who think radioactivity is fun. No more three-headed frogs or kids with leukemia. Nuclear power ain't fit for a dog. The sun don't give us all we need to make this country run. But that nuclear power's got us fussing and fighting, and I do believe it's time we was done. No, no, no.